Hello and welcome to another episode of Podcast DX, the show that brings you interviews with people just like you whose lives were forever changed by a medical diagnosis. I'm Lita.
I'm Ron.
Jean Marie is not joining us today. She has a migraine, which we have covered on previous episodes, and collectively we are the hosts of Podcast DX. On today's show, we're going to discuss an often misunderstood chronic disease, narcolepsy.
Our guest, Jennifer, is a 48-year-old married mother of two daughters in college. Jennifer was diagnosed in her early 30s with narcolepsy and had to leave her career in 2008 as a college professor. She considers herself an advocate for patients with narcolepsy and other sleep disorders and is joining us today from York, Pennsylvania. Hello, Jennifer.
Hi, Jennifer.
Hi.
What exactly is narcolepsy? I've never actually heard of it.
Oh, goodness. Well, I didn't either until I had it. Narcolepsy is a sleep disorder. And what happens is individuals have excessive daytime sleep or a constant urge that makes them want to sleep because their sleep is fragmented at night. And it really makes more sense to call it a wakefulness disorder, meaning that people with narcolepsy don't go through the usual cycles of sleep and are left in this almost constant state of sleep deprivation when we are awake. So for me personally, I can sleep 10 or 12 hours straight at night, but still have symptoms the next day. And it's really about the quality of the sleep rather than the quantity. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, some narcoleptics, because of this lack of quality sleep, experience other symptoms. Some of those are hallucinations, short-term memory problems, slurred speech, difficulty focusing or concentrating, automatic behavior, and even something called cataplexy.
Well, we'll talk about that in a little bit. How common is narcolepsy?
About one in every 2,000 persons is thought to have narcolepsy, and that statistic is according to the Narcolepsy Network, which actually this weekend is having their annual conference.
Oh, nice.
So good timing. From these numbers, though, narcolepsy is quite rare, but I want to point out that it's possible many people go undiagnosed or misdiagnosed. Some of the more common misdiagnoses are things like depression, chronic fatigue, thyroid problems, ADHD.
Hmm. Well, Jennifer, what were some of the symptoms that led you to seek out a diagnosis?
In my case, I went undiagnosed for years because everybody says, oh, I'm so tired, I'm so busy, and I just thought it was a normal feeling. But when I was teaching, I couldn't help but wish I was sleeping instead, and it felt a bit like I was waking up from surgery all the time, very groggy.
Sure, I know that feeling.
And having difficulty, finding words, motor coordination. You know, I just assumed I was like everyone else who was a working mother, but one day I almost collapsed. I was just so exhausted. So I went to the pulmonologist, and I just thought maybe my asthma medication wasn't strong enough or it wasn't working.
Okay.
And he said, I think you might have a sleep disorder.
Wow.
And unfortunately, my daughter was diagnosed at 17 last year. She was diagnosed as well. And that was difficult. At first, we thought, well, she's just a typical teenager who likes to sleep long hours. Mm-hmm. But I knew what symptoms to look for, and so I pushed for her to get a sleep study as well.
Jennifer, can I ask, is that a hereditary issue?
It is, yes. Wow. I don't know. I think we have a statistic here that's 1 in 20 people will have, you know, people that have narcolepsy, 1 in 20 might have a genetic history there.
Okay.
And also get narcolepsy.
Okay. And I've never heard of most of the symptoms that you listed earlier. It must be really one of those out of the network type of problems, huh? I mean, I just never heard of it.
Yes. And it's not like it is on TV or in the movies or on the internet. There's fainting goats now. It's not like
that. I've heard of those. Fainting goats. Yeah. You have yoga with goats and fainting goats. I don't know why goats get involved with everything nowadays, but yeah, I've heard of it.
Right. Fainting. Goat yoga, yes. The whole thing.
Ron's giving me a look like, what? I wish I could put his face on the radio. Right,
I have
now.
No words for what you just said.
Go ahead. Tell us about these symptoms.
Yeah, it's very difficult to deal with. Some of us have had to go on disability because we couldn't function well in the workplace.
And so that's severe.
Yeah, cataplexy is really one symptom that's especially challenging. I do not have that. It's involved in a particular type of narcolepsy, but it involves a sudden loss of muscle control when someone is surprised, excited, angry, laughing.
When you say muscle control, are you talking about like all muscles or?
It can just be something subtle, which is why sometimes people get diagnosed with epilepsy instead.
Oh, okay.
It can be subtle or it can fall, you know, you can fall or have injury. I know someone in my group that just broke her nose from a cataplexy attack.
Holy cow.
Wow.
So it can be severe, but it's commonly it's subtle.
Okay. Wow.
So the cataplexy is involved with individuals that have type 1 narcolepsy, but there's also a type 2. Both of those types have excessive daytime sleepiness, which I mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But you don't have the cataplexy, right?
I don't have the cataplexy, no.
Now, is this what you have, could that develop into what you've got? Could that develop into cataplexy?
It does for some people. They develop it later.
Okay.
It's hard to say. They haven't really studied, you know, how many people. I do a lot of reading of the research.
And
I haven't found an article that says anything about, you know, when people develop cataplexy. But because it can be so subtle, like just a weakness in your arms or slurred speech or something, it's hard to tell.
Okay. And you were talking about hallucinations, too?
Yes. Something that is really difficult is they're called hypnagogic hallucinations, and they can occur at the same time as automatic behavior or sleep paralysis. So I'll give you an example so you can understand this better. For me, when I'm falling asleep, I can hear things like the doorbell, a phone call, and those things aren't actually happening.
Oh, they're not happening. Okay, I thought maybe
they're
not
happening.
Okay, all right. Wow.
And I can hear someone coming in the room in my bedroom, and actually movement of the bed, and it feels like they're coming to harm me.
Wow.
But if I have sleep paralysis, I can't move my body. My mind is awake, but my body is kind of paralyzed, so I can't yell for help.
Is this something that comes and goes, or is this something that you might experience it once and never experience it again? Or is it something that will bother you every night?
Everybody is different on that.
Okay.
I haven't heard anyone who has it every night.
Okay.
Mostly it's once in a while. And, you know, some people just have a bad dream, but the sleep paralysis probably indicates something's wrong.
Right. Okay. Wow.
I'm just totally stunned.
Yeah, I used to smell. I'm sorry?
I said I'm just totally stunned by what I'm hearing. I did not realize the depth of this.
Yeah, it can be a smell. Sometimes I can smell popcorn. And I know that there's no popcorn in the area whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
And it's just when I'm extra, extra tired.
Okay.
So surprisingly, another symptom that many of us have is insomnia. You would think that, you know, we're sleepy all the time, so we sleep. But it's really a puzzle, especially for the researchers, because one night it can be 16 hours of sleep straight, and the next night can be insomnia.
Oh, wow. Well, of course, when you say 16 hours of sleep straight, if it's not good quality sleep, then you really shouldn't
have
counted.
It doesn't really matter,
right,
yeah.
Right. I mean, I would call that insomnia as well.
Yep.
I recall you mentioning that your daughter was just diagnosed, and I guess a lot of people are diagnosed or start when they're in their teens. When did you find out, or when did you start first noticing your symptoms?
Most people do find out in their teen years. And of course, you know, decades ago, we didn't have any tests, and we didn't even know. We knew it existed, but it wasn't commonplace. It wasn't podcasts like this that bring awareness.
Sure.
So my mom always told me that when I was 10, I had mono.
Okay.
And she said, after that, I became a different kid. I never really recovered, was her thought. So, you know, I really pushed myself through school. I was a high achiever, but during that time, people would call me lazy or unmotivated.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, you know, my story is teaching and as a professor, finally I was diagnosed, and I was so relieved because I didn't have any interest in things like cooking, cleaning, showering. It was all just this huge monumental task to me.
I'm thinking that from what you're saying, don't you think that this should be, the awareness should be brought to the teen age group then? Or to parents of teens. So any of our parents that are listening, maybe your child is not lazy. Maybe your child has narcolepsy. I mean, something serious to consider. I mean, you know.
Absolutely. I totally agree.
Right. I mean, this could be really like a
game changer.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, you hear about bullying and everything. Well, this is a type of bullying. I mean, not that parents want to bully their kids, but if a parent is constantly after a kid to do something and saying, you know, you're so lazy, you're this, you're that. I mean, it's not like they're trying to bully them. They're trying to encourage them to do something. But maybe it's a physical thing. Maybe it's something that needs to be checked out. So parents, look into this. Thank you. That was my two cents. I got on my soapbox, and now I got back off. Okay, continue.
Well, it's interesting you say that because as far as I know, you know, people that go through are in pediatric medicine don't really receive training in this when they're in the medical field.
That's a shame.
It's really only the sleep specialists, and sometimes the sleep specialists only get, you know, one day, a 3-hour lesson on narcolepsy.
That is a shame. That is a shame.
And it's just not enough.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so you're right. I'm sure there's people that aren't diagnosed that have it.
Do the doctors know what causes narcolepsy?
So it's thought to be a neurological disorder. So the brain is not regulating the sleep and awake cycles properly. But really the cause is unknown. Like I said before, there's a genetic link that they found. 1 in 20 people have a chance of also contracting the disorder if they have a parent with narcolepsy. But the research, it's pretty slow in terms of other disorders like sleep apnea. That has, you know, everybody's talking about that, but
sure.
No one's really talking about some of these other sleep disorders.
Mm-hmm.
I should mention that there can be narcolepsy that's not genetic. It's caused by maybe a traumatic brain injury,
mm-hmm.
and they call that secondary narcolepsy, not primary.
Okay. All right. Well, good to know for our veterans. We do have quite a few, and football players, and young football players, you know, even the kids. You know, you're kind of opening this whole world right now to my mind, and I keep thinking, my gosh, it's a good thing that we found you, and it's a good thing that you came on, because this is an important thing to get out there. Just out of curiosity, how did your healthcare team come about your diagnosis? Is it something that they see on a sleep study? Is it like a brain wave or what?
What they do is really two things. There is a questionnaire. It's called the Epworth Sleepiness Scale, and I believe you can get it online. And since we're talking about teens, that might be a good first step.
Okay.
To see if there's an issue.
Okay.
But that doesn't actually measure anything. What you have to do is go to a sleep center.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll do what's called a polysomnography. And what happens is you actually go there to sleep for the night, and you get hooked up. You look like an alien. You have electrodes and all kinds of things on your body. So there's sensors that are measuring all different kinds of things. But that's not really what tests for narcolepsy. That's what tests for sleep apnea.
Okay.
What you have to do for narcolepsy is do a daytime test. So often people go in for their nighttime test and it comes out normal. And they're so disappointed because they feel they have a sleep disorder. It's because they didn't ask for the daytime test.
Okay.
So that's important.
Okay.
The daytime test is called an MSLT, Multiple Sleep Latency Test.
Okay.
Getting a little technical here.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Okay. Basically, what you do is you nap 20 minutes for five different times during a day.
This is on, now, this is on purpose? People, like they tell you have to take a nap?
Yep.
Okay.
And for us, people who have narcolepsy, we think that's great. We're happy.
Right, right.
You know, we're not happy to be woken up after 20 minutes, but we can fall asleep all five naps.
Okay.
And they'll measure REM sleep. There's another disorder. It's called idiopathic hypersomnia, which is very similar to narcolepsy. I should mention that.
Okay.
The only difference there is REM sleep.
Okay.
So most people don't hit REM, and that's the sleep where you have rapid eye movement, dreaming. Most people hit that 90 minutes into their cycle once they fall asleep. But for narcoleptics, it can be within seconds.
It can be in what?
It can be within seconds instead
of
up to 90 minutes.
Wow.
So if you fall asleep during your naps,
And they see that you're having the REM sleep right away.
Right.
Okay.
Then they know you have narcolepsy.
Oh, okay.
There are some other things that research has looked at, looking at genetic markers actually is something pretty exciting. So far they've only found, a genetic marker for people who have type 1 narcolepsy. That's the kind with the cataplexy.
Okay.
But, and we've known about this genetic marker for decades, but 30% of people without narcolepsy also have the marker.
Okay.
So it's not, you know, not generally used.
Right, sure.
And it, you can't really pinpoint who has it and who doesn't.
Okay.
Also, and I had this procedure done, you can get your level of hypocretin tested. And what that is, they do a spinal tap or a lumbar puncture and extract your cerebrospinal fluid and take a look at these hypocretin levels. So for people with narcolepsy, we know they have low or non-existent levels, but we're still not sure exactly how to use that as a tool for diagnosing narcolepsy.
Okay. Well, I mean, at least they know what they're looking for and how to find it. I mean, that's an important step. It's too bad there's not a, I guess, an easier way rather than the daytime sleep study. It sounds expensive is what I'm thinking. And, you know, a lot of times people will shy away from expensive testing and say, it's not that important. But if, like you're saying, if it can be so debilitating that they could actually go on disability because of it, it's certainly worth looking into. Are there any treatments for this disease?
There's not a cure, but there are different medications, and people do pretty well on the medications. But they're all off label, so none of them are designed specifically for narcolepsy.
Okay.
And some of the medications have horrific side effects. I know the medication I take, it tastes as though I have a mouthful of pennies all the time. It's very metallic.
Wow. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And a lot of people just, they say they can't stand it, but, you know, I kind of deal with it as best I can. But there's other more disabling side effects. That's just more of an annoyance.
Right. And then if you're taking this medication, does it improve your quality of nighttime sleep and that's how it helps you?
No. So what they do, it's really medications that I always say they treat the symptoms, but not the cause.
Okay.
So they're not really helping your sleep. They're just mostly stimulants to keep you awake.
Oh, well, yeah, that's no good. How about
the same thing?
Yeah, we did. We did a couple of podcasts recently on CBD oil. Do you know if they've studied that to see if it could help get a better night's sleep?
In my groups that I'm in, that is constantly put out there as, you know, has anyone tried it? Can people give me some ideas or suggestions?
Mm-hmm.
But I have not read any research in the sleep journals about that yet.
Okay. All right.
How has the narcolepsy affected your life, your work life, your personal life, your social life? At the beginning, we said that you used to be a professor, but gave that up. Can you go into detail about how that has affected your life?
Sure. To be perfectly honest, it was devastating. I haven't worked. It's been 10 years now.
Mm.
And even last night, I still had a dream that I was, of course, when I was teaching, we had chalkboards and whiteboards. You know, there wasn't a whole lot of PowerPoint.
Okay.
So I dream that I'm still writing my formulas on the board and things like that.
Wow.
And I really, you know, miss that connection with my colleagues and more so with the students even.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. As a mom, I did miss out on my kids' activities. I tried as best I could to make them, but there were several times, you know, I just couldn't. I'm lucky that I have a supportive spouse and mother, and they do the things like the cooking and the cleaning and, you know, running the kids around to their events. Something that people forget is that it's financially difficult. Even if it's not severe, you're still paying for the co-pays. Mm-hmm. And the
difference between your income and disability pay, you know, I mean, that's got to be tremendous.
That's been terrible. I mean,
sure.
That's something that really affects you when you are receiving 30% of what you used to receive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it changes your life. But I should just want to point out my case is pretty severe. I don't know the percentage of people on disability, though I have met at least 5. We go on something called a snooze cruise.
Yeah, I looked that up. That's very interesting. Yes, I saw that.
Yeah,
so
there's a group of people with sleep disorders that go on a cruise together. And it's kind of for support. And also just a little bit of fun.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. Ron and I are recreational therapists, so we completely approve of your snooze cruise.
And we would like to be on one of them.
Yes, yes, yes.
We monitor, of course.
Yes, of course. Right. We'll join you.
Well, I mean, there's a lot going on, and it sounds like your particular case is very tough. Do you have any advice for the listeners out there?
Yeah, I do. And I, you know, I often write in when I say I'm an advocate. I often try to help people on the Facebook groups or in these different organizations that study sleep disorders. I try to educate them, but also tell them, even if you have to go on disability, even if you have severe symptoms, the medications really do help the majority of people. And there are universities like Stanford and Emory that have researchers that are studying this every day.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to point out, just because I can, because I'm on the podcast, that when people ask me, what do you do? It's really hard to say I'm disabled. There's such a stigma with that.
Sure.
And then I also get the, well, you don't look sick. How can you be disabled?
Oh, yes. We know that. We know that stigma.
Right. So when you have, you know, we need to be more aware that people have hidden or invisible illnesses.
No, that's very.
And also,
oh, I'm totally sorry. Please continue.
That's okay. Oh, I just wanted to say I used to be such a go-getter and be so busy. But what I forgot to do, and this is a blessing in disguise that I have this disorder, I forgot to practice gratitude. And that's very important. People say, how do you cope? And I cope by practicing gratitude for the small things. I have two dogs. I have a book club. And I'm so thankful for that.
Nice. Very nice.
So thank you so much for inviting me today. I really appreciate that. If you have any more questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Well, I am kind of curious. What was your career field? What were you instructing?
Oh, I was actually teaching business statistics, but I'm a psychologist by training.
Wow. Big time.
That's fantastic.
It is. Have you thought of doing any podcasting, you know, like yourself?
I never thought about it, no.
Because, you know, you could start small. You could start with just your cell phone. And when you go to your meetings once a month or when you go on your cruise, you know, you could put together your own narcolepsy podcast group. And
that's a great idea.
And put that out on a podcast. And it's I can give you some tips and hints and help you along the way if you need it.
Oh, great. I know I did work on with someone from Canada developing a visual for people that have hidden illness.
Uh-huh.
So instead of a person in a wheelchair, how do we depict someone that has an illness you can't see?
Right.
And I did the statistical analysis for that.
Very interesting.
So I do try to look for things where I can help. You know,
very
so
interesting.
A podcast is a great idea.
All right.
I'm kind of interested in the results that you got, because in my full-time job, I work with kids with disabilities, and the majority of them are in wheelchairs or they do use some type of device for ambulation. And I know when we're out in the community, when folks see my students, they all, you know, will kind of like part the Red Sea to let them go through because they're in a wheelchair. They can physically see a disability. But I've also done volunteer work with folks that were, you know, quote unquote, normal looking. I hate that term, but they didn't see any disability there. And they were treated so rudely because they weren't acting, quote unquote, normally. So I totally understand that. So I'd be interested in the research that you found on that.
Well, it sounds like a new podcast coming up. I think we're going to get
sounds
her going.
Good to me.
We're
going to
get her going on podcast. Well, thank you for joining us today, Jennifer. I'm sorry that my daughter Jean wasn't available, but migraine is also an invisible illness, and she's suffering with one today.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time and bringing enlightenment to narcolepsy, because I don't think Lita nor myself realized just how prevalent it was.
And how severe it is. How severe it could be. Yes. I mean, I really had no idea. I mean, I could have just, you know, guessed, and I could have said, well, it's people that fall asleep during class, you know, didn't get a good night's sleep, but it's much more detailed than that. Thank you for sharing that. And if our listeners have any questions or comments related to today's show, they can contact us at podcastdx@yahoo.com, through our website, podcastdx.com, on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, or Instagram.
And if you have a moment to spare, please. please give us a 5-star review wherever you get your podcast. As always, please keep in mind that this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regime, and never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on this podcast.
Till next week.